I think we are all an authority to speak to our own personal experiences, right? And we are reflections of the greater whole as well. And so for me, why I speak to masculinity, why I speak to gender constructs, but also cultural constructs of how we see ourselves and we give and receive love and how we relate to each other is because I've really created and have been through carnage in my own personal relationships.
Life is all about relationships. Lovers, family, body, or money. How satisfied you are can be completely explained by how you relate to things around you. This is Sophie Jaffe, and together with my husband, Dr. Adi Jaffe, we are here to explore and teach you how to maximize your relationships and achieve a happier life. Let's get ignited. All three of our children have really sensitive skin. They get rashes and breakouts that are super uncomfortable and painful when we don't use the right products. And Nikki's natural wipes are made exactly for this. We've been using these on Noah for the last few months and we're seriously obsessed. The world's only 100% natural baby wipe. They are infused with the moisturizing and antimicrobial powers of organic coconut oil, which you know I love. And they also use Manuka honey essence, which is antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory. These were created by two parents desperate to alleviate their newborn son's endless battle with diaper rash. Now their more natural, clean, and pure solution is helping thousands of parents around the globe, including us.
Nikki's gets rid of harmful chemicals like parabens, known irritants, and allergens, and has earned Nikki's Natural Wipes one of the highest certifications from the Environmental Working Group. They contain organic ingredients, none of the chemicals that can typically be found in traditional wipes, and harness the power of nature to help protect your child naturally. We seriously love these, and so does Noah, which is really the most important part.
Yep, and we are so excited to give our listeners an awesome code to use. Go to nikkis.com, that's N-I-K-I-S.com, and get 20% off by using the code IGNITED2021. And that is IGNTD2021 at checkout.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Ignited Recovery Secrets podcast. I'm Dr. Adi Jaffe, and I'm here with a conversation that it's been a little while since we've talked about on this Friday episode of Ignited here, and that is masculinity. And I've got Steph Stefanos with me, who's another really great guy who's trying to do work in the field in ways that embody this new version of masculinity, right? We talk about toxic masculinity and the Me Too movement. We talk about cheating, porn, early experiences in childhood of what it's like to be a man growing up with these specific kinds of expectations. And the reason I think this conversation is so important is I deal with a lot of men who struggle with sex addiction. And I think the stuff we talk about here today is at the core of those struggles. And then obviously, we also talk to a lot of women who are in partnership with men who have this version of what the apex, what the best version of a man is like, that can sometimes be really problematic when you're trying to create intimate relationships. And so there are so many amazing topics that we regularly go through at Ignite that we end up touching with Steph. But I think what you'll see is having the man-to-man alone conversation about this gives us a lot of room. A lot of room for understanding where is it that we're trying to go? What does growth even look like when we're talking about this new version of masculinity that we're trying to create? And so I really, really hope that this sinks in deep for the men listening right now. Pay attention to what you want to start employing in your own life. And for the women, this is a signal for when all men could go.
From the moment I wake up till the instant I go to sleep, as most of you know, my day is crazy full. I often share my schedules on good old Instagram, but for those of you who don't know, I am running three inspiring businesses. I have three gorgeous children running around the house constantly. And in between helping them with school, creating alone time with Adi, and also carving out some solo soul time for myself, there is basically no room left in the day for anything else. I really do know how it feels when I load up on unhealthy foods, and it's not a great look. I don't have time to stress about these added fillers or sugars or whether my food will actually make me and my family feel good and be nutritious.
And that's what I love about Philosophy Superfoods and why I started this company. I know that they are trustworthy, that they are packed with high-vibe antioxidants, minerals, adaptogens that all help me deal with what the world throws at me each day. I love my life. I love my children and my jobs, and I want to be able to really thrive in all of these things and put on a bunch of different hats and roll with the punches. And Philosophy Superfoods really allows me and supports me in wearing all those hats. If you would like to stock up on our Philosophy Superfoods, which are always organic, raw, incredibly sourced nutrients, use the code IGNITED, that's IGNTD, to stock up for you and your loved ones. You and your body will feel so grateful for it.
So I'm actually kind of happy we get to do this just you and I, because the concept of masculinity in this new age, I'll call it, is a big one for me. I've talked about it, I've written a couple of articles on it, and I think it's going to end up being the responsibility of men to change what masculinity, what being a man means in this new age.
Yeah.
You know, we've had the awakening, I'll call it, of the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
The card has been pulled, this old notion of what has become called toxic masculinity, but at least from my vantage point, is just us coming to terms with the fact that what men were pushed towards, what men were told was the epitome of being a man, served one gender, and that is men alone. And so it left a lot of carnage, and maybe not even men alone, traditionally kind of white men. And obviously you're Greek. We can talk about the shift in what, you know, not even all of us used to be called white men per se, right? Like I'm Jewish. I didn't used to get included in that. I'm sure coming from the culture that you came from, there may be challenges around that as well. And so what I'd love to do is really open up this conversation a little bit, use your personal stories, my personal stories. And I think this could be a really fun, I was looking at your website before, a really fun conversation that challenges all of us to create better relationships, to be more accountable, to become the best version that we can be so that the world gets to benefit from what we are good at without having to suffer from some of the more ego-driven, less relational, and definitely potentially intimacy destroying aspects of, I'll call it, sort of old masculinity. So yeah. I'd love to, for you, why don't you just introduce yourself to our audience? Let's start with simply, you know, who is Steph? How did you get to this point? Why are we sitting here right now and talking about this new way of being?
Yeah, I think we are all an authority to speak to our own personal experiences, right? And we are reflections of the greater whole as well. And so for me, why I speak to masculinity, why I speak to gender constructs, but also cultural constructs of how we see ourselves and we give and receive love and how we relate to each other, is because I've really created and have been through carnage in my own personal relationships. And that started from a very young age with my relationship to myself and my parents and how I saw myself, lots of just violence and volatility in my environment and upbringing, and how that trauma shaped who I became as a young adult, becoming violent and abrasive myself, you know, emotionally abusive in intimate relationships, a lot of cheating and prostitution and adrenaline and alcohol and anything I could do to just avoid dealing with my stuff and dealing with the pain. I didn't know I had it per se. You know, I was in just this constant ignorance around who I was. And like most of us, if we're blessed enough, we come to a point, an apex point in our lives where we have to choose either continue the same path and continue to suffer and be in pain and deal with it in ways that aren't healthy, such as drugs, alcohol, you know, status acquisition, material acquisition, whatever it may be, that come from really is coming from a place of deficit or extremity or just unhealthy nature. Or we make some changes and start living from in a more authentic, healthy, transparent, honest ways. You know, virtues or characteristics that we generally value more in the human experience, particularly in a social setting. It makes us more approachable and more lovable, and we can basically just bond at a very deep level. And so I came to one of those apex points or those critical points in my life a number of years ago and in my early 30s. And it was just really time to shift. And I had avoided it for so long because it was so painful and it was so difficult. And I just got to a point where I just had to choose. I had to choose that the pain of not changing would outweigh the pain of change and that transformational process. And I just went all in. And I remember saying to myself, it was very, very clear, like it was yesterday. And it wasn't that long ago, but like it was yesterday, I said, I'm either going to end up committing suicide, because I went through those phases of being suicidal and all of that. I'm either going to end up in a mental hospital or a mental asylum because I just, this is too confronting, or I'm going to move through this and one day be able to impart these experiences to others and maybe, just maybe, inspire them to know that there's a way through their pain and through their own trauma as well. And very, very blessed, I feel, that it was the third path that I was able to take. And at the same time, I was also, well, not at the exact same time, but I also have, my professional background is in psychology and behavioral science and so forth. And so I was able then to marry the two, the personal life experience and the professional experience, in a very cohesive, integrated, embodied way. And I continue to do so, of course, because we're always a work in progress. We're always growing, right?
Of course. So a lot there to unpack, and I always find that it's through specific stories and specific analogies and allegories from our own lives that we get to teach, educate, and inspire other people. And so if you don't mind, I want to start unpacking some of the things. You know, you mentioned that you had been going through all this pain from an early life, part of your life with your parents and in relationships, et cetera, but that you were unaware of it. One of the things I talk a lot about with the men that I do work with is that, unfortunately, in traditional masculinity, we're not often taught to, first of all, even pay attention to the feelings we're having. But then when those feelings are not congruent with success, with victory, with power, with what has unfortunately, again, been traditionally been considered manly, we're almost taught implicitly to hide, redirect, avoid, numb out, whatever that is, whatever that pain, the source of that pain is, so that we can appear like we're doing well, right? So that we can move forward. That whole, you know, the classic, how are you doing? Oh, I'm great, man. How are you doing? I'm killing it. You know, that approach. If you don't mind, let's dig in a little bit to what that pain was. And maybe, obviously, you've done a lot of work. So what was the origin of it, where it came from, and what feelings it left you with?
Yeah, sure. I'll go there in a moment. I want to pick something up though that I think is very important. Masculine strength, power, direction, they're all healthy qualities. They become unhealthy or extreme, aka toxic, when they are extreme and when they become oppressive. And it's the shadow side of those masculine qualities that we actually despise. We don't despise strength. We don't despise discipline, confidence. We don't like ego. We don't like being oppressed. We don't like being controlled. These are the shadow sides of that masculine energetic that becomes out of control, right? To self-serve, or it stems from fear. So I think that's a very important distinction to make, because if you speak to, you know, from a place of polarity or attraction dynamics, if you speak to the feminine, you speak to a female, does she appreciate and really is she attracted to a strong, confident man that's healthy in that, not arrogant, not in his ego? The answer is really yes. But we've lost our way there and we've really taken that to extremes. And that's just an example, but I'll come back to the piece about the pain for me as well. And so
And I just want to make some, yeah. I want to clarify something because I know in some of this language, when you talk masculine and feminine, there is that the polarity within the sexes, right? The
yes.
Male born, female born sex, but within each of us, we have aspects of this. And so this can work correct. In homosexual, heterosexual, and non-binary relationships.
Absolutely.
And what we're really talking about is this nuanced internalized sense of the softer, more intimately connected, more ephemeral version of ourselves, and that more directed, goal-driven, focused version of ourselves. And those are just like shorthand terms that
sure.
we give them.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And essentially all of these are human constructs or human traits.
Of course.
But we learn deeply and in a rich manner from contrast. And so when we say masculine, feminine, that resides within every single human being, we're just able to learn and adopt that way of being in a way that's more integrated through the yes. contrast. So yeah, it's a great distinction. So for me, my pain, the specificity of my pain was really being abandoned and rejected by my father, having enmeshment and entanglement or emotional incest with my mother. And that's called parentification as well. There's some other terms for it. And that essentially is where my mother unconsciously projected her emotional needs that she wasn't receiving from her husband, my father, onto me as the eldest son. So I felt a tremendous sense of responsibility. I grew up very quick. I became an adult very quickly. I became a people pleaser. I wanted to make sure everyone was okay. I was very scared as a kid. I didn't have a voice as a child, because my father was just so abrasive and aggressive and physically violent and all of that. Just witnessed a lot of violence between my parents. So felt very unsafe, great deal of uncertainty, doubted myself a lot. Like there's just a lot that came through that. Right. And as a young kid and a very young teenager, I was bullied a lot as well because I was very introverted and very uncertain and just on shaky ground. As I became an adult, or rather as I became a teenager, I turned that energy and I changed it and I became very angry at the world and I didn't know how to deal with that. And so I became violent myself. I became a bully sometimes as well. And I just fighting every weekend and drinking and just not being a healthy man and started to do what I wanted, how I wanted, when I wanted, where I wanted. So I really wasn't connected in my heart. And I really wasn't seeing myself for who I truly was. Mm. And that pain as well, about witnessing my parents and seeing them always argue and fight and hate each other. And my mom would share information with me about, she's going to divorce my father. It was just a lot to take on as a kid. And my parents were doing the best they could with what they had. I get that. I didn't obviously back then, but I also developed notions and my identity around freedom and how important freedom is to me. And so anything that threatened that in my life, whether it was an intimate relationship or a commitment, like an engagement or buying a business or buying a house or whatever it may be, I would just feel like annihilation is coming upon me, is being thrust upon me. So I would fucking run the other way.
Yeah.
And again, I just spent my life running and fighting, running and being confrontational and oscillating between those two extremes. It was one or the other. It couldn't be, there wasn't a middle ground, right? And my businesses were failing because of that. It was up and down, burn and build. It was blaming everything but me, market conditions, business partners, wasn't the right time, not enough capital, but I wasn't ever looking at myself, who was the common denominator. And so there's some of the issues that I really face as a man as well. And obviously, not obviously, but also that compensation. Like I would wear the facades and the masks and I would want all the nice things and present that I was very wealthy and articulate and I had all the status and all of that. But really inside, I was secure in myself to some degree and I was confident, but it was more arrogance and it was more masking. It wasn't genuine. It wasn't authentic and real. It was bullshit and a facade.
Yeah. You know, I recognize so much in the story that you tell. Also grew up, my father cheated on my mother, apparently serially. I didn't know that until much later, but early on cheated on her regularly. And then he actually left us at some point for a short period of time, but he left the family. And so a lot of the things you're talking about, the abandonment, and then my mother sort of using me as a confidant.
Yeah. Surrogate husband.
Yeah. On a set of things that, you know, an 11, 10, 12 year old is really not prepared to handle, but you don't know that at the time. And I think this is important for a lot of people to hear. the circumstances that you were born into seem normal to you because you went through them. So it doesn't, I talk to people who were abused as children on a regular basis and they had to normalize it somehow. They had to play Tetris in their mind and figure out how to configure that into a functional life. And once you've done it for a long enough period of time, it seems like a version of normal to you. And so it sounds like we both grew up in this place where at the age of 11 and 12, I had to grow up enough to be able to even have these conversations with my mom. My mom telling me, again, similar things. She was thinking of leaving my dad, killing herself, the struggle she was having. Ironically, I mean, you know, you went into the helping profession as well and psychology. I think that's one of the things that drove me into that, to be able to sit there and hear and express empathy in a situation where I couldn't do anything. Like there was nothing I could do to help my mom function better in a relationship, but I wasn't asked, right? And you're 100% right. Everybody's doing their best all the time. And so are our parents. That doesn't mean there's not wreckage and things that we have to deal with. So, 100%. So you ended up relying on methods to numb and on aggression and violence and ways to assert yourself, at least partially because maybe you weren't able to do that earlier on.
Yes, so it was correct. I felt out of control.
So it was a way to stand up for yourself. And then it sounds like part of your story developed into having maybe some of the same issues that came up in your own household growing up that then manifested in your own relationships. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just playing out what I experienced as a child because it was familiar. And because it was familiar, it felt safe. That's the simplicity of it. That's really what it was. And so I would behave in that way because it would connect me to my childhood or connecting to maybe there's a chance that I can bond with my father or I can bond with my mother if I play out the same. You know, this is the way the psyche unconsciously works. If I play out a similar situation, I can have a redo. But I was never having a redo because I was never aware of it. So I was just cycling and looping the same shit over and over again.
Yeah. And that's so common to so many of us. We had Bruce Lipton on the podcast a while ago. I don't know if you're aware of his work or not, but
very aware, yeah. I mean, studying him for years, his work for years, epigenetics and so forth.
He's an amazing, amazing man. He was talking about, you know, these repetitive patterns that we go through and they are, you know, like it or not. They're just scripts written into your brain about how relationships function. So logically, you can know that you don't want this, but until you do the inner work to change the internalized script, it doesn't really matter all that much what you want and what you don't, because he talks about this and he says it so well. While you're thinking, your body and your brain are acting in the world. So you're sitting there trying to figure out what to do and you already have these systems built in and your body's just going on autopilot, which is unfortunately leaves so many of us in this problematic area. So you're hiding, you're in relationships, they're not serving you the way that you want them to. You talked about cheating, you talked about prostitution. I don't know how much you know about my story with Sophie, my wife, but cheating and online sex and all these avenues for me of exploring ways to kind of escape the relationship whenever it got uncomfortable, right? Things would get uncomfortable in a relationship, I would run into somebody else, quite literally. And obviously, it almost completely exploded and destroyed the relationships that we had. I know some of the work that we have done to fix and correct that. That's actually what brought on the Ignited podcast at all from the outset. Let's talk a little bit about what was it, what was the time period and the moment in which you realized, oh shit, I can't keep going like this. I'm going to have to change something.
About 6-7 years ago, when my partner at the time, she found out that I was cheating on her, and it really compounded from there. And that was the catalyst. That was the shame that I felt watching her in such pain, and all these old repressed memories and trauma just came back to me from my childhood. And I really,
see your mom.
Yeah, mom, dad stuff, like everything just really, really came back. And I just knew that I needed to really do something with that. And you know, I was very blessed and fortunate, very grateful to my partner at that time, because, you know, she, instead of going into her old pattern of running away, because that situation was very familiar to her for her own historical reasons, and her own childhood trauma and so forth. She stayed in that relationship and I stayed in that relationship as well, instead of me running away too. And we stayed in it for, you know, a good 8 months trying to work through it, but it was just too tumultuous. It was too much water under the bridge. It was too difficult for both of us. We weren't meant to be together, whatever that means, right? And that's absolutely fine. But my point is this, I say that because instead of breaking up immediately, and yes, me doing my inner work, which I was going to do anyway. And when we did end up breaking up, I just kept doing my inner work. I just kept going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I just remained deeply committed to that. In fact, I deepened it even more when she left. When we both decided that this isn't going to work anymore. But instead of her leaving immediately and me just doing my inner work and saying, yep, next relationship or the next version of me, like, I got to actually change with her, with the person that I hurt deeply. And I think you can understand, you can resonate the value and the power of that, right? You can resonate to that. It's phenomenal. Yeah. It's next level. Like it's, I got to, because I could go to a new relationship and it's all new. It's the limerence phase. The hormones are flying around. It's, I can be this great person. I can commit to being faithful and being honest and transparent, all of that. But when you've got to do that with someone that you've hurt deeply and you've acted in shameful ways and the actions of being very dishonest, and then to really come face to face with that, that's fucking powerful, man. For me, it was so powerful, and it really gave me an opportunity to actually, I don't want to say, and I can't say right my wrongs because it wasn't about that, but to actually show up differently with a person I had a great deal of shame with. And the cascade effect of that with the deeper work I did with my parental wounding and my inner child wounding, and really started exploring that from a psychosocial, psycho-emotional perspective. And I deepened my own psychological and behavioral science practices, and it just really opened me up. And I had a lot of great people around me. I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, I had shamans and spiritual healers and counselors and psychologists and you know, coaches and all of that. And I did a lot of deep work on my own as well, because I had to. So that was the catalyst there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. If you don't mind, I want to dig in for a second, because you know, I remember, so I while Sophie and I were dating, I cheated on her with a woman from UCLA, where we were both students. And I told her about it. My father, actually, who would cheat on my mom over and over, when I talk to him about what the hell am I supposed to do about this, he's the one that was like, you got to go tell her. There was actually a very interesting kind of full circle moment for us. I told her and she broke up with me on the spot. Like, we took a 30-minute walk. I told her what happened. She asked me some questions. Like, you know, I have to break up with you. I was like, I was afraid you'd say that, but you know, if you have to do what you have to do. She broke up with me. We were broken up for almost a full year. And I fought to get her back, but then I screwed up again, like repeated screwing up. And that was, to me, when that moment of self-reflection going like, what the fuck am I doing? I know I want this and I'm saying I want it. And I go do all this work to get this relationship back. And yet these self-defeating practices keep hitting me over the head. What is it that I'm missing? And I'd already fought drug addiction. So I'd known how to beat habitual patterns. I didn't even know that my sexuality and my fear of intimacy were part of that. And so, like, I remember the moment Sophie called me. I was at work at the time. I was a graduate student. And she told me she had found this kind of secret world that I'd created, this secret online sex world. And that shame that you mentioned, the reason I want to bring this up is the shame you mentioned, it engulfed me, right? Like, the moment she said that, it was like I was on fire. I could barely breathe. My heart felt like I was beating in my stomach. And it was a very interesting moment, because on one end of the spectrum, all my fears had just been realized. Every time as I was engaging in it, I was afraid of getting caught. But on the other side, there was relief that I didn't have any secrets anymore. And it's really diving into that side, the not having secrets, that I think allowed me to start doing some of the work. And you're right, doing the work with the person that you've hurt has power, also because there's a mirror to your face, somebody who knows you from before and doesn't let you just bullshit. But also you get to test the reaction of what it is that you're doing. Was there, in the context of all that, was there a moment like that that you remember where, oh, I have to do this, and I have to do this for myself, otherwise the rest of my life is going to be stuck in these sort of patterns?
Multiple moments, multiple times when I was literally sleeping on my parents' couch because I felt so much guilt and shame that we were living together. I just let her stay in my place at that time, which was my grandparents' house. Like they had passed away. Well, one of them had passed away and one of them was in a home. I actually looked after them for many years. And so that was just staying there. And I slept in my car a couple of times. I was just very, very distraught around how my life was unraveling. And so, it was just very, very important to me to make some big changes, man. And I remember clearly the first, within 2 or 3 hours of her finding out us arguing at the front of my house and just realizing in that moment, I was like in this survival fight or flight mode, right? But realizing in that moment saying, shit, like I actually wanted to get caught. Because I remember talking about it with a friend of mine, a month or two leading up to that day where he said, man, aren't you, I was sharing a little bit with him. He didn't know much, but he said, man, I mean, are you sure you want to be doing this? And he was trying to course correct me. And I'm like, no, I don't really want to do this, but it's like, I sort of don't know any other way, man. It's really strange, but I really want to stop this. And I remember that very, very clearly. And even, like I said, we were arguing at the front of our house and she wanted my phone and I wasn't going to give it to her because she wanted to look further into all of that. And I just remember in that moment, like, I've got to stop this shit. Like, this is, I've got to be done with this.
Yeah.
I can't be playing with people's lives and saying one thing and doing another. Mm. And I mean, the cascade effect of what happened after that, the shame and the guilt and the experiencing of that and moving that through the body. And that's a process, man. That doesn't happen overnight. It's not like I'm going to stop this now. And, I forgive myself. And I mean, yeah, sure. That's part of it, but it's so much more than that.
So much more. So let's move into that because I've given a couple of TED Talks and both of them have been about transformation. And what we're talking about right now is that process of transformation. And there are a couple of things that I want to kind of get us started with, and then let's see where it goes. Everybody loves the endpoints of transformation, right? Like everybody loves looking at your story and going, wow, look at all the changes he's made. That's so great. Or looking at me and my relationship with my wife, or just me for my drug use, whatever that is, and go, wow, that's got to be great for you, right? It's you've got to be so proud with where you are right now. But the reality of transformation is that it's normally a pretty painful, long, arduous.
Very.
It's sometimes incredibly unfulfilling. And what I mean by unfulfilling is you're doing work that is causing discomfort and friction and pain in your life. And you may know at the beginning, I don't know that you actually trust this, but you may know later, oh, this is going to make me better. But it's like, if you're an athlete, pushing as hard as you can to the point where you're about to throw up, or maybe you do throw up on the side of the field, knowing you have to go through that for the growth. But in the interim, there's strife, there's struggle, there's a lot of hard work that has to go into it. I know that's surely been true for Sophie and I. It still ends up happening that way sometimes, right? Whenever we find a growth edge and we know that we have to push through it, it can be a 3 to 4 to 5 hour, 8 hour, 12 hour, really difficult time in our relationship that ends up better on the other side.
Yeah, for sure.
So you got to do that about 8-9 months with that person.
Yes.
With your ex. Maybe we can talk about some of the techniques, tactics, things that you learned, but then also since then, because it sounds like that was 5-6 years ago, a lot of growth has happened since.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, most definitely. Immense growth. And there was, a couple of years after that, I went through another really even more tumultuous self-reckoning process. I mean, man, the tools and techniques, I can list many. Breathwork being one of them. And breathwork was so transformative for me that I became a breathwork practitioner and integrated into my practice and my coaching. When I did breathwork, it must have been about, 6-7 years ago for the first time.
You're talking like holotropic kind of breathwork?
It was a combination of holotropic and biodynamic. It was her technique, but she was trained in holotropic and biodynamic breathwork. It just changed my life. Cops came knocking on the door because they thought someone was someone called the cops because I was screaming and I was just so out of my body. It was an amazing experience, but also a tumultuous one. And I didn't understand what was happening. It was just so foreign to me back then. And man, let me be very clear. I was exposed to some really funky shit as a kid. My mom was very out there and, you know, quote unquote spiritual and just very different. So I was exposed to funky things when I was a kid in terms of alternative medicine and alternative spiritualities and so forth, spiritual practices. So I was not foreign. That was not foreign to me in any capacity.
Got it.
And various cultures and wisdoms around the world. Like I've been to 70 plus countries. It's, you know, I've been to some amazing places as well and learned from different cultures and all of that. But this breathwork just shook me up. So breathwork was definitely a modality and a tool that I used. I work with different shamans from Indigenous Australia and also from South America, you know, psychology, just working with psychologists, coaches as well. And again, there was spiritual healing there. Energy healing was part of that. I've done so many different things that have served me in different ways over my life, you know. And so those tools and techniques, until you really experience them and when they're really resonant with that timescape and that space that you're in your life, that's when they really have maximum effect. You know, it's like my friend, I remember Clint was just saying, you got to go see this lady, man. She's here from Europe. This breathwork thing is phenomenal. I'm like, okay, I'm in a lot of pain right now, so I'll try anything, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just blew me open.
Is this the Groff kind of method or?
It was her technique and she was schooled in many different, and I am as well, I'm schooled now in various modalities and I integrate my own sort of flavor into all of that. She was schooled in that. And again, she was schooled in, which is very much like myself. So holotropic, biodynamic, rebirthing, which is part of transformational and sort of, well, not really. Well, it is. They're also very similar, man. They're also very similar.
There's so many overlap in so many of the techniques.
Big time. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. So as you're starting to go through this, and we talked about the, you know, discomfort you talked, I mean, just one example, right? Just thinking of the fact that as you're doing this self-work, you're doing a practice that makes you scream in a way the cops get called.
Yeah. I mean, it's real energy being released from the trauma, being released from the nervous system. And it's unconscious because I'm unaware of it. I'm not making links and connections in that moment. But later, of course, I'm able to, and making the links and connections later, there's something deeply healing about that because now we have something tangible to work with and work through. And with proper guidance and proper processes, whether it's self-reflective practice, meditative breathwork practices, whatever it may be, you know, psycho-spiritual tools, you're able to work through that and create a new reality for self, you know, through very deliberate ways of thinking and being in the world, which does then change your physiological constitution, the way your nervous system is wired and the way you function at a cellular level, right? That's essentially in some part epigenetics.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And so now, a lot of what you do is impart those lessons onto other people. And again, right, I always find that it's the personal stories and the personal connection that gets us. So what have been some moments in the last, let's say 5-6 years, where you really were able to look at what's going on, have an interaction with a partner, with yourself, with other friends, whatever that is, and be able to kind of see the difference, see the change, see the gap and the growth that you've been able to go through?
I want to add something I think is very, very important to the previous question you asked around processes. You know, we can have all the tools and processes we want, but unless we are met with loving presence, with empathetic resonance and a safe container, those tools and practices don't work. So I was very blessed to surround myself and have people in my life that really saw me in a non-judgmental and compassionate way, that met me with empathetic resonance and loving presence, something that the ancients have been doing for thousands and thousands of years. And that's where the healing is able to transpire. Then the tools and the modalities really help, right? And that's really what I practice, elicit, and focus on in my own practice as well. It's everything, man. It is fucking everything.
At Ignited, we call that, so fuck shame is kind of one of our mottos.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude we try to bring to all of our interactions, right? Respect and non-judgment. So that creates a safe container for somebody to bring whatever their pain is.
Yes.
And people tell you that over and over and over. They share with you, I've never said this to another human being.
That's right.
And you're so right, Steph. You've got to create the environment. And as the healers, that's part of our job, is actually to hold somebody else's pain and taking us full circle to what we talked about before.
Yeah.
Not all that different maybe than some of the things we ended up having to do as children. Hold the space. It's just, except for now, I have some tools both for the communication and for actually being able to help that person once they do the sharing. And before I didn't.
Yeah. No, I hear that, man. But to answer your question about what was it, one of those moments where I recognized, wow, some growth has happened. This was probably a couple of months before. So this must have been, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago or something, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. Maybe no more. Yeah, 4 years ago. It was a couple of weeks or a couple of months before the next big immersion that I went into of pain, right, and self-discovery. I was with my partner at the time. This was a new partner. And we were together maybe a year. But it was a very honest relationship. It was a beautiful relationship. There were obviously complexities there, but because we're not together. But it's a very honest, transparent relationship. And we were doing some work, some tantra work with a friend of mine, a practitioner. And he was asking us some questions, like really getting to the root and the depth of, you know, who are we together? And he asked her, I remember this very distinctly, he asked her, you know, are you 100% committed in this? You know, are you all in this relationship? She said yes. And he asked me and I said no. And I said, I'm 99% in, but I feel I'm still working through stuff, but I'm very clear that I want to be with you. And I was just very honest. And in the past, man, I would never, ever be like that. Yeah. And in that moment, I was really grateful for my honesty. And it was the beginning, maybe not the beginning, but it was, that was the, for her, because I wasn't 100% in, she just was out, because, and that's fair enough. Like that's, she knew what she needed and wanted. And, you know, she appreciated the honesty. I feel she did, but it also hurt her a great deal. And I can understand that, but I was really grateful that I was able to be honest, and I wanted to be honest, and I was.
I love it. Look, here's the thing. I say this to people all the time. Because we preach radical transparency. Mm. Radical transparency doesn't make all your communication easy.
No.
I do believe it saves you from a lot of future pain. And what I mean by that is, had you lied in that moment, you would be in a relationship where you weren't as committed as the other person. They would believe that you are. They would find ongoing evidence that you're not as committed as you are, because guess what? We are not... we're not as good at hiding our emotions as we may think we are. Mm. And so she would start developing resentment. Now, on one side, you're resentful that she's making you lie, even though she's not making you lie, you're doing it to yourself. Right. She's resentful that you're not showing up the way you say that you want to. And next thing you know, it wouldn't have been in that moment that things would start unraveling, but it might be 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. And there are people listening right now who are still in relationships and maybe are married with kids in relationships where honesty hasn't actually been part of the conversation for years, sometimes decades. And so radical transparency is sometimes just a shortcut to the closest proxy to truth in the moment. And what you were able to communicate to your partner at that time was, here's where I really am. You get to do with that what you want, but I'm not going to lie about where I really am in order to pretend that I can give you what you need.
And that's what I used to do. And then just go behind my partner's back and do what I wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And keep the peace.
So I've also had many, many moments where these things come full on. And one of them for me was always about distraction, like sexual intimacy, distraction from my partner. And I remember we talked about this in an episode before, and some people loved it. Some people thought I was an asshole for even saying this, but it's okay, right? That's, you still have to own your truth. Mm-hmm. One of the moments that I knew things were different was Sophie and I were at a beach at a party with like a birthday party for a kid. So everybody's running around and Sophie's standing kind of where the computer screen is for me right now, where you are talking to me. And there were about four people in front of me. She's talking, and right over her shoulder, so like literally right here, was this really beautiful woman in this yellow bright bikini. And in every relationship in my past, I would be distracted and having a hard time paying attention to what the person I'm listening to is saying, but never said anything about it because, you know, I don't want to admit that this thing is pulling me. And I leaned into Sophie and I said, look, I really, really want to have this conversation with you, but there's this hot girl right behind you and it's really distracting me. And my wife in this moment, because we'd already been 3 years into our work, she looks back, she smiles and goes, good call. And she just moves over like 3 feet. And I was trying not to objectify the woman, but it was distracting me. And I was being honest with my wife and she took it the way she was supposed to take it, which was, I'm doing my best here, but I'm losing it. And I don't want to lose it. And I don't want to lie about it. So let me tell you the truth. And so she did the thing that made the most sense, which was just like, move. Whereas in the past, it might've been like, well, stop fucking looking. What's wrong with you? Or yeah, I would have lied
shaming
about
you.
It.
Yeah. Or you would have hidden from it. Yeah.
And there are a lot of opportunities like that. They don't always, just to be clear, they don't always go over that well.
Sure.
But when you can say the honest thing, like you just mentioned, and like I had the opportunity to say to Sophie in that moment, there is a deep sense of relief about just being able to be 100% yourself.
Yeah.
And not having to lie.
And have the confidence to not be attached to what your partner or the other person says. And maybe they do shame you. Maybe they do embarrass you. Maybe they reject you or they abuse you. You know, they what the fuck is wrong with you? I can't, but your sense of self-worth is so connected that to you that your truth is far more important and that you can see that their hurt is their pain. And yeah, maybe it's because of something that you said. And also you get to take ownership and responsibility for your truth, whatever that may be. And it may hurt other people and you've got to be responsible for that. And you can't project that back, right? And that's the growth process, the growth arc that we get to take.
Yeah. Yeah. My ultimate test of that, and I don't know if that has been tested in an intense way for you over the past 6 years as you've been doing the work, but the ultimate test of that for me was that about 6, maybe 7 years after we were married, how long? I'm trying to remember the exact timeline. But anyway, about 7 years after, my wife ended up cheating on me. We were going through some strife in our relationship and for whatever reason, she felt unseen, et cetera, and did the exact same thing that I'd done to her years ago. And I got to confront what it felt like to be on the other side. Now, by this point, we're married, 2 kids, you know, living together, like our life was fully enmeshed. And I remember she said to me, because that's what she did to me right after she came and told me about it, though. She didn't lie about it. She told me about it right away. She said, are you going to leave me? And I was like, in what universe am I now going to turn around and leave you? It hurts like a motherfucker and we're going to have to work through some shit. This is not just going to disappear, but no, I'm not leaving you. And it created, we had a whole new set of work to do. Yeah. And I do have to say this because I don't know that I would be able to understand this at this level had I not gone through that experience. You know, trauma of betrayal is real.
Very.
And up until that point, I was, and at least in a physical sense, at least in breaking our vows and intimacy, et cetera, I was the only perpetrator. I was the only person who had crossed the line. And yes, there was an equalization to some extent of that when my wife stepped out, but there were also then moments, weeks, months, maybe even for a year or two after, where the trauma of that came back for me.
Oh yeah. Play out.
And I got to experience what it's like to not be in control of your emotions and your reaction, because in those moments when you're triggered, when you're activated, it's very difficult to be logical if possible at all. And that was a huge, huge learning moment for me to truly understand the power. And so since then, I really do try to be even more diligent about the honesty component. Because I'd rather be caught in a small fuck up now, 30 minutes after it happened, 45 minutes after it happened, without anything big occurring, right? No real breaking of barriers by being honest than I ever would carrying the lies. And I wonder, have you ever obviously there was that one moment of telling your partner, hey, I'm 99% in, knowing there may be consequence. I'm wondering if this way of being has ever been challenged for you again in the last 5-6 years, other than that.
Multiple times. Just every time I choose to be honest. Every time I choose to be honest on a contentious issue or an issue that I think may hurt my partner, but that's not my intention, but it may hurt them, you know, whether it's how they're behaving. So instead of shaming their behavior or being passive aggressive with them, just calling them forward and saying, hey, how you're being really hurts me, or how you're behaving right now, I don't like that. And I know why it hurts me. It hurts me because of some old stuff that's amplifying the present moment that's still stuck in me, and that's my responsibility to work with. And I really would appreciate if you don't show up that way. But in the past, I would just be reactive and be passive aggressive or very directly abrasive. So now I've got to, because again, when I spoke my truth as a kid, it was rejected. It was, you know, shut your mouth, don't speak, whatever it may be. And so that pattern became very familiar, that if I speak my truth, I'm going to get hurt, or I'm going to be shunned, or I'm going to be repressed. But it still has to come out. And so as an adult, it would leak out in aggressive ways, because I'm a strong guy physically. And also I developed very thick skin and a very strong, loud voice. And so I could be at times intimidating if I really wanted to be. Yeah. But I was taking advantage of some power that I had because I wasn't dealing with it. So I think I'm confronted with that often, because I just really choose to be honest. That's the type of life I want to live, as difficult sometimes as it can be.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It is a choice on an ongoing basis.
It is. Yeah.
Where are you now? What's happening in terms of your relationship status and the work you're doing and all that sort of stuff right now? And what's the work that's left for you? What are you doing currently for that ongoing pursuit of growth?
Yeah. So I'm very happily married, living in Austin, Texas with my beloved Christine. And we've been together, nearly 3 years now. Which is interesting. So times feels like it's flown by.
And you guys do couples work together now,
we do.
Right?
Yeah, we do. We she's been in this space and I've been in this space well before we met each other and knew each other. And she's been in this space for 15 years. You know, she's got a master's degree in spiritual psychology, but an amazing coaching practice, and is exceptional, an exceptional coach and intuitive as well. And so, yeah, we do work together, and we love that. Our brand is called Love Amplified. And there's amazing programs and services in that. And for me, I have a very focused one-on-one practice, and I work with couples a great deal as well. And so do Christine and I together. A lot of amazing things going on. But for me, my growth, man, is just continuing to expand my edges, just keep taking myself into the discomfort. Not because I'm a glutton for punishment, because I just know there's just something to learn there and, sure, and take from that, right? And be careful not to wear the punishment and the difficulty like a badge of honor as well, because that's just an old pattern too. But my growth edges are just really exploring the unknown within myself, having difficult conversations if I want them, if I really want to speak to something truthfully, being in my truth and being honest and trusting the decisions that I make. Sometimes that can be a real edge for me as well.
Can you share about one of those that has come up recently that kind of really stands in the forefront for you?
Yeah, just the conversation about having children. You know, we both want children. It's something that we're very active in, but also just expressing the fear around that. And, you know, what does fatherhood look like? From my perspective, I won't speak for Christine, but from my perspective, what does fatherhood look like? What does it look like being a parent? You know, like, not only the responsibility, but like, is my lifestyle going to change? Do I have to change a lot? Am I going to be a quote unquote good father? Am I going to be patient and tolerant? Am I going to be loving and accepting? Because I never experienced that from my father.
Sure. Yeah. I wonder how much of that is there. Fear that you won't be able to show up the way you want to.
So having those very honest conversations, which I know, I'm a full yes to having children. It's something that really resonates with me. It's in my heart. And I never was that way. Like for so long, literally, you know, up until 4 years ago, I was like, I'm a hard no to children because of what I experienced. But then something, as I was doing my deeper work, I remember the day I was driving in my car and this, it's like fucking this lightning bolt hit me. And it's like, whoa, I want to have children. And I was crying. I was on my way to one of my tantra teacher's house, and I was just crying. It was a really bad day, and I was driving and crying. And so, oh, I'm open. My heart's open now. And then we explored that, and then we went deeper with that. But I'm very clear on that. But to also say, you know, to my wife, I have all these fears, it comes with risk, even though she can hold that and she's fine and she gets it and she knows that I'm clear. She also has some fears that, oh, is he really clear? He's telling me that, you know, so that's been a big one as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Children are definitely their own lesson. Yeah.
No doubt.
They're definitely their own lessons. We have three. So each one is its own unique lesson too. They don't show up with the same, they don't show up with the same manuscript.
Interesting.
Hey man, it's been so cool to have this conversation. I want Thank to you, let bro. The people know, you mentioned some of the brands and some of the specific, places people can find you, but tell us again, somebody wants to dive in more deeply with you, where do they go?
I mean, I've got a couple of websites, but a simple one is growwithsteph.com, and you can find out about me there. There's applications to work together. There's a heap of free stuff as well. And just, you know, on social media at Stephanos Sifandos.
I love it. I love it. I follow you. I now follow your wife as well.
Wonderful. Thank
and
you.
Yeah, I think it's always really great to give people a look. In the end, everybody needs an expander, a model, somebody that they can resonate with and a path that they can follow. And it's so great. I really do hope that more, I feel like women have been on the forefront of this for many, many years now.
Yes,
and hopefully us men are catching up.
I believe we are.
Yeah, being able to serve as positive examples. And thank you so much for being willing to be open and all the work that you do. So many people are in Austin now. Sophie and I keep talking about the fact that I swear we're gonna go to Austin and just spend a couple of weeks doing dinners and interviews and conversations with people, because there's so many good people down there now. It seems like a wonderful...
Yeah, it's a good community, solid community.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Really great to meet you.
Likewise.
Thanks for coming on Ignited. For everybody listening, do what I always ask you to do. Take a screenshot right now and let us know what resonated with you. Tag Steph, tag me, tag Ignited and Sophie, and just give us your lesson. Somebody will read the thing you grabbed, the thing you held on to from this conversation, and it'll bring up something in them that will resonate and will give them the help. So do that, share it with us, and we'd love to see your feedback. Thank you so much and see you next week. Thank you everybody for listening to the Ignited Podcast. We are so happy to have you along for this ride. Please go and subscribe to this. Leave us a review. We love hearing from you. And if you want more, don't forget to go to ignited.com, where all the podcast episodes are available with show notes and so many of the little details and links from each one of these interviews. And you can look at all the future events that we have going on, all the things that make Ignited so special, even beyond this recording. Again, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week.